Today we look at the passage that is at 95% of weddings across the nation, if not the world. This is a very popular passage. This is one of those passages that's like everybody knows about. If they've never read it, they still have an idea of what it is. Even people that wouldn't necessarily believe in God would read this passage at their wedding. This is 1 Corinthians 13. It's the love passage. It talks about love. I mean, that's its objective, and it gets its point across too. So I want to read it really quick, just so we have an idea of what we're talking about here. But 1 Corinthians 13, we're just going to do half the chapter, 1 through 7. It says, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things." I recently watched a video on Facebook. It's this comedy group that does this thing where the idea of, you know, competition in just the sports realm today, everybody gets a trophy and that sort of thing. Well, this was kind of making a joke at that, but it was saying that we are trying to get rid of the competition, therefore we are playing soccer without a soccer ball. So in the video they mimic a soccer ball, and kids kick the air as though it's a soccer ball into a goal, and it's all of this like, "You're doing a great job" sort of thing. But it's a really interesting video because the coach says how hard it is because you never know where the soccer ball's at. And he actually asks the students, there's about 15 students standing there, and he says, "Who has the ball?" And they all raise their hand. Like, so it was a really interesting video to watch. And as I was watching it, I was like, this fits. I mean, I think that ultimately what we see in the video is they're not playing soccer. They're running around. They're actually pantomiming. They're not doing anything. They've got together, and they're kicking the air, and the coach is being very uplifting and optimistic, but it's not soccer. It's actually a facade. It's a joke of the real game. And what's interesting is I think that in our lives as Christians, when we look at the idea of love and the action of love, we often do things that we think is love, but we're actually mimicking it because we're going against what verses 4 through 7 talk about. So the first thing I want to look at, though, real quick, is verse 1, when it talks about speaking in the tongues of men and of angels, and you have not love, you're like a clanging cymbal. It's nonsense. It makes no, like, it would be as if I walked into a room and I'm trying to give instructions and I'm just banging cymbals together in order to convey those instructions. It makes no sense. It doesn't do anything. It's not uplifting. It's actually more annoying than it is anything. And it's destructive to your eardrums too. So I think there's an element there that Paul's trying to portray to them. You know, you guys think you have the words figured out, but you don't. You're not loving. Therefore, it's not doing anything. The next one is Paul attacks the gifts of the church. The church of Corinth highly admired people with gifts, highly lifted up gifts. And ultimately, he attacks those too. He says, "And if I have prophetic powers, that's a gift, and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, another gift. And if I have all faith, another gift, so as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing." So those gifts don't do squat for you at all without love. That, in fact, by using those gifts without love, you're raising up yourself instead of others, and especially God. And so he wants them to know it doesn't make you any better if you have those gifts and do not implement love through them. Then the next thing, he goes after their actions and their good works. So he again attacks those, and he says, "You gain nothing if you don't have love in doing those things. In it, if I give away all I have," the mindset of charity, as well as "I deliver up my body to be burned." So even the idea of sacrifice without love, you gain nothing. So then what I love, though, is Paul doesn't just leave it at that. He explains what love is. So if there's a guy in the church at Corinth that's like, "I don't," well, then how should you do it? He says it. He talks about love is patient and kind. It does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist in its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. If we look at these, we see that some of them are positive connotations, some of them are negative connotations. So it tells you what love is and what it is not. So first it tells you love is patient and kind. This is the idea that your love for others should be filled with grace. Love is patient with people. Love is grace-filled with people. So this is the idea of, if someone does something wrong to you, or you're expecting something out of someone and they don't do it, this is when you go, "I'm patient with you because I love you." And the thing about love too is, I should say this: love is something that should be done not always as a conscious decision, as though you, sometimes it has to be. Sometimes you have to choose to love. When someone's being really interesting, and I say interesting in a bad connotation, when someone's doing something wrong, sometimes you have to choose to love them. The idea when we are called to love our enemies, I do believe that that is a conscious choice. But I do think as well that we ought to start working our way to become the type that loves subconsciously. That when we do something, so if you're married and you have your spouse and your spouse does something that irritates you and you ask them to stop that, you hope that they would just naturally, they would start making a conscious decision. But after a while, it should just happen. And they do it not because it's like, "Well, you told me to do it." It's, they do it because they love you. And what's interesting about that is they don't have to go, "By the way, I'm doing this," because that's not love. Love is, "I love you enough to change myself for you." And that's what God's asking us to do for him, as well as people. And so when we look at these, love is patient and kind, this should be, we should be disciplining ourselves to do these things subconsciously without thought, because our love just emanates through our actions, through our thoughts, our words, and we are allowing God, who is love, to push through our selfishness and our just nasty thoughts and actions, and just overcome those things with love, and ultimately allow those things to allow love to be the thing that is shown and it is subconscious. It is not, it doesn't always have to be a conscious decision. As we go on, then we hit some negative things, the things not to do when it comes to love. Love does not envy or boast. Love is not about you. If you go into a situation, love is not about you. So if you are making the situation at all about you, like if I forgive you solely based on the fact that I want you to forgive me, or I say sorry because I want you to say sorry, that's not love. So love does not envy. I'm not wanting something out of this friendship. I'm not wanting something out of this relationship solely for me. But I'm doing this because I love you. It does not boast. It is not arrogant or rude. These are selfish things. It does not insist on its own way. Isn't that interesting? Love is about others. Love is about Christ. It's not about me. It is not irritable or resentful. I think this is a tough one for a lot of people because this is an idea of keeping a record of wrongs. This is irritable is whenever you come home from work and you're easily irritated and you're complaining and grumbling, as the Bible's told us not to do. We are easily irritated, and irritable at all is a big one. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. So we see the negative, what not to do. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but it rejoices with the truth. I love that word, rejoices. You are excited about the truth. You are excited about the person that is succeeding in Christ. You are excited about someone who got a promotion, even if you didn't. Love rejoices with the truth. And then finally, verse 7, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. These are huge ones in our life as Christians. We bear one another's burdens. We believe the best in people. We hope in a future for people. We hope optimistically for a better future. And then we endure things. This is a dual thing. It endures the idea that we are enduring hardships ourselves. We're enduring others' hardships with them. And then ultimately, we endure this walk with one another in this world until we get to heaven. And so this is the love passage. This is something that we as Christians should be focusing on. We as Christians should be applying in our lives. And the thing is if we truly looked at verses 4 through 7, there's one of those things that we don't have down. And so this is a perfect passage for us to look at it and go, almost create a checklist for yourself and go, this is something I need to start working on. This is the portion of love that maybe I need to start making a conscious decision to start changing. Even maybe it's a question that if you have a best friend that's really honest with you, or your spouse, maybe you sit down with them with this passage and say, hey, where do you feel I'm not loving you? Where do you see that I'm not being what I should be as a Christian? And hopefully they will look at you and say it in love back, and not like Job's friends who were terrible people. But they would love you and lovingly tell you, hey, this may be an area in which you need to start working at. I know that I do. I know that there are spots in that are really convicting for me, and so that I need to start making a conscious decision to work on. So I hope that this helps you with the idea of love, and this is something that even next week as we look at the maturity aspect of love, that you can start now, and then we work our way into the next passage to go, okay, now that we're starting to get it down, this is why we need to mature in it. So hopefully, my challenge for you is, again, to look at these, but to pray to God and ask for Him to open your eyes to maybe some blind spots that you have concerning love, and that you would continue to work on him, work in him on these things, and then learn and teach yourself to love better.